welcome to the Comic Cast, Ireland's number one comic podcast. I'm Craig.
And I'm Liam.
And we've got a super show lined up for you this
week. A really good show. I'm feeling this is the first time probably ever that I felt that, you know, we have a good show lined up.
Should we point out that the reason for that is because we're drinking?
Yeah.
Which is maybe the first time we've drunk on air. Let's actually toast.
Oh, no, it's the second time, but we'll toast. Go for it.
Toast, not just the Comic Cast and our listeners. And if you're at home, or in the car, wherever, pull out a whiskey. We're drinking some Jack Daniels here. And, you know, it'll feel like you're drinking with your friends, even though you're drinking alone.
That's true. Did you say in a car there?
Yeah. You've got a bottle of whiskey in the, you know.
Yeah, but stay put the rest of the night.
When was the other time we drank on?
Bob Burns' podcast.
Oh, okay. One of the interviews.
Oh, one of the interviews. Yes. But this is the first time.
In your house.
Yeah. Mainly because we're rushing to go to the pub.
Yeah, we need to be drunk when we get there.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a lightning fast round of the Comic Cast.
Full of slurs.
Yeah, so a brief outline of the show. We're going to what you've been reading. I've been reading some stuff. You've been reading some stuff. We're going to talk about it. Then, what you've been watching. You've seen most of this. Liam has seen The Watchmen. Or Watchmen. Not The Watchmen.
Watchmen, yeah.
The movie.
Watchmen, Secret of Kells.
We've seen The Secret of Kells, which is amazing. And you've also watched Fears of the Dark.
Fears of the Dark, yes. So we got some comics. We got some movies. Thank God the movies are back because
we're running out of comics.
Then some bits of news. And exciting stuff at the end of the show.
Yeah, I've got a competition. We'll see.
Maybe competitions.
Remember the last one went really well. So let's jump straight in.
Why don't you go first?
Oh, okay. Ooh, you put me on the spot. What have I been reading this month, Liam? I've been reading Daredevil. By Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev, which is the kind of most recent Daredevil series. And I want to say to anyone out there who hasn't read this, A, you need to read it because it's amazing. But B, if you like The Dark Knight, Batman comes kind of shit at the minute, but this Daredevil book is like The Dark Knight, the book, except he's in a red costume instead of a black costume. It's Daredevil taking on the crime world, because Daredevil doesn't really have powers. He's blind, but then can use his extra senses to help him see. So really, when they just cancel each other out, he's just a regular person in a suit.
Yeah.
You know? He's blind, but he can see.
When I first heard of Daredevil, I presumed he was like a parody of superheroes. Yeah.
But he kind of is. But yeah, this is such a good book. Daredevil, first off, his secret identity is revealed to the world. You know, everyone he loves is put in danger. But, you know, he comes around, he's a lawyer, so he decides to sue the people who have leaked his secret identity in their breasts. Then he overthrows the kingpin of crime, spoilers, and becomes the kingpin of crime himself, because that's the only way to control the crime world. It's amazing.
It does sound amazing.
I've made it sound kind of trashy, and it kind of is, but in a really good way. It's really good.
And is this in a collective volume, or is it just out an issue?
Sorry, I may have mentioned this is... it's in an omnibus is what I've gotten. And I've mentioned this previously because I got it a few months back, and on the cover, Daredevil has a registered trademark symbol on his nose.
Yes.
But, consumer tip, I emailed Amazon, apparently to release new covers, so I emailed Amazon where I bought it, and said, hey, will you send me out one of those new covers for free? Since... You know, the covers are shipped out for free, and they're like, oh no, we can't do that. And what we can do is ship you out a new one, and you send back the old one.
Oh, okay.
The entire book. And
yeah,
I said, bollocks to that.
Okay.
I'm not going to the post office. So,
and there was me thinking Amazon are being quite reasonable and fair.
So I cancelled the order. So then they just gave me the entire money back, 70 quid.
Oh, wow.
So I got a book for nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Wow.
So I would recommend anyone like immediately go
buy
one on Amazon. Hopefully you get this fake cover. Even if not, I'm sure you could find someone who wants to trade covers.
Yeah.
Send it back. Don't send it back to Amazon. Just write a shitty misspelled email and they'll give you 70 quid.
So this is dynamite. We're here to help.
Yeah. Consumer pro tip. It's really good. Alex Maleev draws it. It's amazing, actually, because I just heard the other day, a bit of a tailgate here. Brian Michael Bendis, who wrote this, and Alex Maleev, who drew this, are bringing out a Spider-Woman comic now soon, which is their first.
Spider-Woman, like that concept at first?
No.
I've never heard that before.
She's a really, like... D tier character, you know, really.
Right. It's kind of really like She-Hulk and all these.
Yeah, absolutely, in the same kind of category there. But they're bringing out a Spider-Woman comic, and it's going to be released as a digital animation thing first, and then as a comic.
Okay.
So this is Marvel's kind of first.
One of those digital animation things that are like the kind of Flash kind of panels and shit.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Exactly the same. But apparently this one's going to be much better. One of the best looking digital comics ever. Apparently it's not, I don't know if you've seen the Watchmen one, but it really looks like there's just pivots on the joints. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So apparently it doesn't have that, and it's going to have voice actors.
Kind of like the Christmas robots in stores. Kind of
absolutely, that those are the exact motions. So they're going to be doing that, and it looks really cool. So this book is good as well. I don't really know. I know I had a point to tie it back in, but I've forgotten that.
Right.
But this is a really good book. Pick it up. It's also huge. It's like a tome. It could be a Bible for a foreign country. There's like 60 issues in this omnibus or something.
It's brilliant. I want to see America impose this as a religion on some new invaded country.
Absolutely.
Where Daredevil is the god.
Oh, and just to point out, sorry, there's one issue which has just stood out where... it stood out. I don't remember what happened. Daredevil's chasing some guy, but it's entirely silent, and it's one of the best... Like, there's no dialogue. It's one of the best comics I've read in a long time. Also, one of the fastest, because there's no dialogue. Let's move on.
Brilliant. Well, something that I've been reading this week is called Nothing Is Simple by the it's true words, by the French cartoonist, I guess, Sempé, I believe it's pronounced.
Yeah, Sempé.
Sempé.
Going champagne.
Well, he's a cartoonist that's been working kind of from... Bordeaux in France for years and years and years, and he's kind of been doing all sorts of different not comic books as such, but lots of kind of how can I explain it, maybe like The Far Side only from the 1950s onwards, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That kind of humor and style of style of joke. But certainly not style in how it looks.
Okay.
Visually. but after that, basically this is a book of one of two books that collect these particular works, these jokes. Mm. And he's really, I'm trying to, because it is hard to kind of, how would you describe that? You can see it there in front of you. It's hard to describe, but if you're a fan of The New Yorker,
yes,
which... I am.
Yeah, aren't we all?
Wearing our suits, drinking our whiskeys, reading
our New Yorkers.
The New Yorker.
But no, he does a lot of covers for The New Yorker that you will recognize.
Yes.
A lot of, and recent ones as well. I actually have some of them that I didn't even realize.
Yes.
Some really great humor, visual humor, and he can take a lot of kind of really serious kind of subjects, just in terms of like divorce and things like that, but makes them really lighthearted. Okay. Like, just for example, I was laughing at this for a considerable amount of time, which is a stupid statement to make, but it just shows a house, the front of a house, and you see the door and you see the window above, and in the first panel, the window above, there's all like plates smashing and stuff, and you presume the couple in there are fighting. And then the next panel is the same again, the door and the upstairs window. There's nothing in the upstairs window, but the woman is now storming out of the house with her suitcase.
Yes, sir.
And then the next panel, in the window above, you just see like a cork popping at the top of the window, and that's it. You know what I mean? It's really some really, really great jokes, and they've been kind of, a lot of these are kind of really old, but they still seem to apply. Like there's another one where there's like a crowd of people gathered outside a cinema, and they're going to see like a Brigitte Bardot movie, and there's a picture of her on the front, and she's kind of like, you know, half naked, semi naked, you know.
Yeah.
But
I'm getting excited.
Yeah, Brigitte Bardot. But all the people who are waiting to go in and see the film are all, and there's around a million speech bubbles. You know, 10 speech bubbles of the people talking, you know, how like, oh, Brigitte Bardot, you know, she's such a shit actress, and oh, she won't she ever cover herself up and stuff. Yeah. And the irony being, these people are all going to see this film.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of have to see the cartoon to get it better, but it kind of still applies today. The way people give out about, you know, all sorts
the Watchmen
of celebrities.
Watchmen movies, for example, even.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, oh, that looks trash. I can't believe they're changing it. As they buy three tickets, they go see it in a row. You know?
Exactly. But long story short, it's a really great, it's the kind
it
of book, good. It is a really cool book. It's this kind of book that you kind of curl up with a big mug of hot chocolate.
Hot whiskey.
Hot whiskey. And, you know, read by the fire. It's really great. If you're a commuter especially, he does some really great commuter jokes. And but the drawings are like, they're absolutely kind of huge in their scope. Oh,
yes.
There's the Brigitte Bardot one right there.
I've opened it twice already. But
they're huge sprawling illustrations. But it's really good. Check it out.
Yeah.
We'll put the link in the full kind of details up.
Let's
later on. So that's what I've been reading. Okay, what have you been reading?
Back to me again.
Back to you.
This one's going to be low on details. But Swamp Thing by Alan Moore is what I've purchased this week and read. And I don't know if you're familiar with Swamp Thing.
No.
I wasn't, to be honest, before. He's kind of like the Hulk, but he lives in a swamp and he's more made of plants. Okay. So he's big, he punches things, he's kind of angry, you know. that kind of...
He's nothing got to do with the creature from the Black Lagoon.
No, but similar...
Similar in
concept, in basic concept.
Myth and
yes,
whatever.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I've never read a Swamp Thing comic before. I've never had any interest in Swamp Thing. Because he lives in a swamp. Swamp Thing. It doesn't really do anything for me. But, you know, Alan Moore wrote this and, you know, you hear... You know, obviously Alan Moore's a great writer. And I heard that his run on Swamp Thing was very good. So they've re-released it, like they're re-releasing everything Alan Moore brought out ever with... By the order of the Watchmen. I keep on saying the Watchmen, and I've never said it before, and you just put it in my head the other night. It's Watchmen.
Yeah.
By the order of Watchmen. Alan Moore, Watchmen, Watchmen, Swamp Thing. Yeah, so, you know, Watchmen. So
he's going to be pissed off with that.
Yeah, I can't say he's going to be impressed at all. No. So I picked this up, and it's pretty good. It's like from the early 80s. And they haven't really touched up the colouring, and it's on kind of shitty paper. So that kind of detracts from the whole experience, really. I'm used to my crisp paper with, you know, kind of shiny, glossy paper with nice colours, and this doesn't have any of that. And also, the art, well, it isn't bad. It's not good.
Okay.
Because it was before Alan Moore could say, hey, I want to work, you know, I'm not going to do this unless Eddie Campbell's
doing it. Pick and mix on cartoons.
Exactly. So the art's, you know, ho-hum. But, for someone who isn't interested in something, I was pretty gripped by this. It's kind of this first volume that I picked up, it's issues 20 through 30 or whatever. Two kind of short arcs. They're kind of horror stories. There's one where there's like people keep on having dreams, or this girl or something keeps on having dreams about some goblin coming to kill her, you know, and a really kind of trashy 80s horror stuff, but kind of with a little Alan Moore depth to it. So it's pretty interesting. The other one's the plants of the earth want to kill everyone. It's pretty much actually like The Happening. Now that I think about it, except Swamp Thing comes in at the end. And actually, I haven't seen the end of The Happening. Maybe that's the twist.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's the or turns into a whole Little Shop of Horrors kind of get out.
Yeah. So this is really good. The only really good, strong. It's quite good. Definitely worth picking up. The only thing on it, if you decide to pick it up on the three fucking details I gave you on the comic there, is that the first issue. For some reason, Alan Moore, when he started, maybe the previous issue, the story hadn't been completely tied up by the previous author, so Alan Moore kind of had to do this thing where he's tying up the last story. And apparently this story's never been printed before in any of the collections for this very reason, because it doesn't really fit into his story. So for some reason to have it here as the first issue, and I was like, I'm never going to get through this. Who the fuck is he? Who are these characters? Like, I have no introduction. There's all this crap going on, but pretty much they all die or kind of go away at the end of that issue, so they're not in it anymore. So that works out fine. So if you do pick it up, don't worry about the first issue so much. You know, everyone dies. So yeah, I quite recommend. It has a funny cover. It feels like cheap paper. Yeah, so you have to take off the dust cover to read it because it feels weird on your fingers. That's my review.
That's all right. Is it anything like, you know, the way people don't like the kind of scratching of nails and chalkboards and stuff? But I have this. This is a world first with toilet paper.
How do you live?
How do you poop? Not with touching toilet paper as such, but the feeling of kind of scraping your hand along that type.
Okay,
of
yes,
kind of,
I understand.
It feels weird.
Yeah, I have a similar sensation with some types of clothing, some kind of, but
lingerie, mainly. It's ruined my sex life. we'll put a full list of all the materials and things that irk us.
But it's a similar sensation, if that's to get your point.
Okay. So something I've been reading.
Road Crew,
which is an online comic written, drawn, and created by Tommy Kelly.
I've read this online myself.
Yeah, it's roadcrew.com.
Yes.
But anyway, so I'm going to lay my cards on the table with this one.
Yeah.
Basically, I knew about roadcrew.com as a webcomic, and I kind of occasionally I would kind of check in and have a look, and the thing that I never got as a kind of, you know, quick internet user looking for a quick kind of fix of entertainment or whatever, I would go on and I would log on and would look at a strip, because it would usually be like a 3-panel strip, you know, akin to Penny Arcade or whatever.
Yes.
But I always found that there was a joke going on in that panel,
yeah,
but it wasn't terribly strong, or that there was no joke at all.
Yeah, yeah.
But with the cards that I'm laying out on the table is that I've been a fool,
yeah,
in realizing that this is a continuing story is what I was trying to say.
A long form.
There.
Yes. Story, if you will.
That reads entirely better.
Yeah,
collected. So that's what we're reviewing, Road Crew issue number 1 and 2.
Yes.
So it's about Jim Soundman.
Yeah.
He's aptly named as a sound engineer, and you know, and the various groups of roadies, and they've just started out. He's just got this gig, you know, being this roadie with his band.
Yeah.
When I first started reading, I was kind of thinking, oh, this it's a little old hat. Not in that, just the idea of roadies, and there's so many jokes about roadies, and there's so many obvious jokes.
Yes, absolutely.
About just the concept.
It's a kind of tired concept.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I have to say that I thoroughly enjoyed Road Crew issue number 1.
Yeah.
And you can tell from actually, because when I was checking out the website, which would have only been recently,
yes,
you know, and it would have at that time it would have developed more into a story. Mm-hmm. But earlier on, that I can see that like every strip is geared towards a joke,
yeah,
and they are all very good.
Yeah.
They're all very good. So this like kind of issue 1 kind of covers 2 kind of the beginnings, and then there's another story called Crossroads, oh, where they meet the devil at a crossroads in you know, musicians, you know, time, yeah, after time, generation kind of thing.
Yes.
But no, it's a well drawn.
Yeah, no,
it is a well drawn comic, and the thing I like about issue 1, and I like this about a lot of comics, especially like Adrian Tomney and stuff, is that when you read the early stuff, you can really see the style developing.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Being fleshed out and being perfected, and you can really see that in Road Crew from the very outset. Like, you know, it looks good, but you know, it's a bit shaky. But by the end of issue 1,
yeah,
it's almost entirely perfected.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, it looks great. Yeah, so like I really enjoyed issue 1.
Yeah,
it is really good. I have to, you know,
if I wanted to pick up a copy of issue 1, where could I purchase it?
I guess you would go to roadcrew.com and maybe email Tommy Kelly.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, and it's a really great print job. And I mean,
yeah,
this is something we've definitely overlooked, I think, in terms of, you know,
I checked out the site because they had the same kind of opinion,
yeah,
that you had initially. Which,
yeah,
was,
yeah,
I didn't really get it.
Yeah, exactly. But and then just very quickly, the second issue, which was only really brought out as kind of like a limited thing for the Dublin, last year's Dublin Comic Con,
yeah,
festival.
Even though I was there.
But it's Road Crew Noir.
Okay, and this is the second issue, is it?
It is the second issue.
So presumably when the actual second issue comes out, it'll be this part, this stuff, and then more stuff maybe? Or
I'm not sure. I think this is issue 2, to be honest.
Because it just seems thinner than issue 1.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
I would imagine.
Well, I presumed it was just brought out especially for the comic. Anyway.
We could ask. We're not the people to ask
yeah,
about
yeah.
these details.
But no, but Road Crew Noir, I enjoyed like even better than issue 1. Particularly, it is, as it says, you know, a parody on noirs. And he's just kind of in a panic because there's a gig going on, and he's lost his soundboard or something, and he needs to find one, and he's, you know, he's meeting all these dodgy characters and stuff, and it's great, especially the style is really nice, works really well.
Awesome.
For the North thing, so definitely check that out.
Yeah.
You know, Tommy Kelly is definitely someone who kind of, you know, is should definitely be one of the names on your list of names,
or on our list of names of people to interview.
Yes, exactly, he is now. Check it out.
Just something I wanted to
bring
up when you were talking about it. I don't know if you've ever read the online comic Questionable Content. I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay.
But the thing is, it you were saying, you know, this it's a long form kind of story, and the jokes maybe aren't so good or whatever. And the problem with Questionable Content, something that Road Crew definitely doesn't fall into, is that it tries to tell a long form story and put a funny joke at the end of every single story. So that if you're reading them in any kind of, like the time, it's like there's just this pause every time for for a pun, exactly. So
yeah, yeah.
Definitely they've taken the better route here.
Yeah, absolutely. You just kind of reminded me, like the first kind of half of issue 1 is kind of like that. But the one thing that I actually thought to myself was that this is strangely working as a story, even though there's a joke every three panels. So definitely check it out.
Yeah, let's move on. We don't have any more comics to talk about.
No.
There's a few things that
a shocking predicament for the Comic Cast. Yeah, no more comics.
Man, I read those comics this week. I was like, oh crap, we have to read, do a comic podcast. Who thought that was a good idea? Gotta read some comics. Let's move on to the movies we've seen.
Movies, yeah.
Well, comic related movies.
Comic related movies.
We're not just the movie cast, although that would be easier.
Coming soon.
Yeah. So, what do you want to talk about first? I reckon we should talk about Watchmen first.
Okay.
I think we should leave Secret Cast for last because we've got a lot to say about that.
Okay.
More so than the other ones. So I guess we should put out a bit of a spoiler warning because I haven't seen Watchmen yet. You have.
Yeah.
I presume most people read the book. So if you read the book, you're probably safe. But I just want to ask a few questions maybe about it since you've seen it. Well, you can tell me your impressions of it first.
Yeah, absolutely.
But just there may be some details here so you've been warned. If you want to go see Watchmen this weekend, don't want any spoilers, turn off now. But turn back on for the Secret of Kells.
Yeah, we'll only turn off if you haven't read the book.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you haven't read the book and you listen to this podcast, who are you?
Yeah.
Hi, Mom.
Brilliant.
So go on.
All right, so Watchmen.
The movie. You didn't like it.
No! I remember, because I have to, again, lay more of my cards, get my deck out, more cards on the table. I went to see this last week in the morning, and this is really, you would never see this in a review, but this is the kind of podcast where you're going to hear this.
You're going to hear the truth you're wrong over, as sin.
Yeah, I was a little fatigued from the night before, and this screening of a 3-hour epic was on at 10 a.m.
So it took its toll on your brain.
Yeah, so it took its toll. So, but throughout the day, I kind of mulled it over like a fine wine.
Yes.
And thought about it a little bit more. But anyway, Watchmen. It was good.
Okay, can I ask your opinion of the book?
Sure.
Yeah,
sure. I'm a fan of the book as much as, any kind of comic person who's worth his socks is. Yeah. It is a very good book. And, who was saying this? Oh, I think Bob might have been saying, on his blog, that, the concept of kind of, fallen superheroes and these types of superheroes has been done to death since.
Yes.
So Watchmen is the original.
Absolutely.
So,
but I think even if you had, even though it has been done to death, I still think there's something in there that's better than...
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
I'm not saying you weren't.
I would be of that opinion as well. It is a great book. I remember reading it first, it was a bit of a hard slog because generally, as you know, superheroes, even these types of superheroes aren't my forte.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it is a really, it's a really good book. Oh. No one can doubt it.
No one
can doubt it.
So you thought the movie was good, but not great. Is the question I'm getting?
Yes, precisely. It was a really good movie. I mean, I really can't fault it. And it was only when I came home that I got the Watchmen comic out.
Yeah.
And I start flicking through it, and genuinely, because I hadn't read Watchmen in maybe
a few years.
Yeah. But I took it out and I started flicking, and I started to realize that it was the panels, they'd just taken panels and created shots almost shot for shot of the comic book, which I think is really really amazing.
Can I interrupt? I know I'm interrupting your flow.
No, you
but the one problem, I haven't seen it yet, just to clarify, but from the trailers, and you're saying that, and the one thing I thought from the trailers was that maybe it was almost too much sticking to the comic, too much, which might be blasphemy to some people, but almost that it would lose its heart or kind of flow to that extent. Is that
it would lose its flow how?
It's heart in that, for example, the Psycho shot for shot remake, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
where you stick
so
rigidly to the subject, sometimes you kind of lose.
That's true, I know what you mean. But certainly because when I went in to see it, that was not on my mind. So it was only from the kind of backwards view of going and looking at the comic book and going, hey, this panel is exactly the same. And another thing I noticed was, and again, I know what you're saying, but even some of the little signposts, tiny little kind of adverts in the background, or things I remember just seeing there was an ad for a garage, and I forget what it said. It said, we fix everything, really rubbish cars are a speciality. It didn't say that, but something like that.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing that in the film and going, that's kind of funny. And then when I was reading the book, I was like, oh my God, there's the exact ad.
Yeah.
In the thing. But I mean,
lay it out. It's fair. Almost a shot for shot remake of the comic. What went wrong?
Almost. What went wrong? There was this is the real, and I really never have this problem with films. Yeah. Like I went to see Gran Torino the other night. I came out, went that was a good film, you know, or a great film.
Yeah, yeah.
But I came on the Watchmen. I was like, that was good.
Mm.
But maybe I kind of expected it to be kind of great or something, and that affected it even when it was only good and not bad, because it's not bad by any kind of means.
Okay.
But we don't need to really go into the story too much, because if you're listening to this,
presumably
you have some sort of thing in the story. But again, like visually, like it looks exactly the thing. Really, really great casting. I thought it was especially in the parts of the guys playing like Night Owl.
Yeah, I was about to say Night Owl is like my favorite character.
Yeah,
good?
He's I think they got him. I know I'm not sure if he's been in many films, but I know he's been in a lot of shows on Broadway.
Okay.
But I was like, holy shit! Like this guy looks exactly like Night Owl. It's insane.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially all the rest. Rorschach.
Yeah.
Rorschach.
And I hear. The comedian, I hear, he's quite likable in this, that Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who anyone who watches bad TV is quite familiar with, that as the comedian, he's quite, you know, the comedian is the toughest role, if I was an actor, I think, because he's a rapist,
yeah,
but also
yeah.
At the same time in the comic, you do kind of feel bad for him at points and kind of root for him. Is that get across in the movie?
No, well, I'm surprised you said that then, because he was like, he was relatively unlikable.
Okay.
In the movie, I thought, certainly because... One major change-ish is that the kind of, you know, have a look through the comic book, find where there was violence, and, you know, multiply it by around 5 for the movie.
Slow down.
Yeah, slow it down, you know, show that wound opening.
Yeah.
It is quite, it was like, I knew it was 18s, but I was...
saying it was a hard 18.
Yeah, like, I was like... I don't think it's hard 18s for like a superhero thing.
Yeah.
There was one bit where I had to kind of look away. It's like I'm not too squeamish or anything, but there was like, oh my god, that's pretty horrific.
Yeah.
And I was kind of surprised that it was, because it wasn't in the comic. So like some small things, and again, these are not spoilers. I'm not going to say anything really.
Yeah.
But there's one. Can I say one?
Fire away.
Okay. Well, just say, you know, when Rorschach.
Roy Shack.
As in Roy Walker. But anyway, yes, when he goes to, a little girl has been, like, murdered.
Okay.
You remember that? That in the...
Vaguely,
and
yeah.
He goes kind of, he goes to track her down or whatever. Or she's gone missing, and he goes to track her down, and he finds the guy who turns out has killed her in a horrible way.
With dogs eating her?
Yeah, with dogs eating her. Exactly. Now, in the comic book... what he does, he sets the place on fire,
yeah.
and he walks out. But
does he change? I think he changed the guy to.
Oh yeah, sorry.
And says you can cut through your arm.
Yeah, yeah,
or something like that to that effect. And I've heard, sorry to interrupt again, but I've heard they cut this bit out because they didn't want it to look so much like Saw 1, which is where pretty much the same predicament is given to someone where
You
can cut your limb off if you want to live.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've changed it to.
A really kind of. Horrible, horrible death for this man, where he is—he's kind of hacked to death, with what I think is like an axe, maybe, like in the head.
Like Rorschach just axes him.
Yeah,
that's great.
It is great. And it was I'm not giving out, but you know, maybe even slightly out of character, because in the context,
I agree.
You know, in the context of the book, he's telling this story to the police. Psychotherapist guy, to try and explain why he's so mean or whatever, and that he stood there watching this guy burn in the comic book.
Yeah.
But in this one,
he just acts him in the face.
Yeah,
what?
In the film, certainly in the film, he's more of an unstoppable, like fucking killing machine.
Awesome.
But it's great. I mean, I was really impressed by the look of the thing. Do you know what was great that I've completely forgotten about? The opening credits.
Is it like a montage?
It's so great. Yeah, it's this montage Bob Dylan's
The Times Are Changing
is playing over, and what a great opening. It's really, it's like, it's all kind of just quick little scenes that are kind of in slow motion, kind of setting up everything that happened
in the
earlier.
Does it show like the old
Watchmen
team?
Yeah, exactly. But it also shows loads of people crop up in it that was really funny. Like, obviously Richard Nixon obviously plays a big part in it. But then also like Truman Capote.
Oh, yeah.
And who else? David Bowie. Yeah. And all these kind of looky-likeys. Like, there's a brilliant bit with Andy Warhol.
Oh, yeah.
And Andy Warhol's there, and he's got, like, one of his kind of Marilyn Monroe portraits, only it's with, one of the superheroes. And it's really clever, and it really set it up really nicely. That's one thing I got to mention. The soundtrack is great.
Yeah, I have the soundtrack.
It's really impressive, and it works really well. It is a good film. I think mainly I've seen a few reviews so far.
Yeah.
And the quite obvious detraction from it is that, frankly, if you haven't read the Watchmen comic book and you're not into superheroes, there's no way in hell that you're going to like this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not like Spider-Man where you can go in and you can kind of enjoy it and have a bit of fun. Like, if you went into this, you'd be like, even the credit sequence, you'd be like, what's going on? I don't understand anything.
Yeah.
So I think this really is a movie that... you're not going to get that much out of it unless you read the comic book or you're interested.
I haven't seen it obviously, but I think it's pretty awesome and probably like it was probably a one in a million shot that like any director could have made a movie so close to the comic, because it's a pretty small audience that would be interested. I think even people who like The Dark Knight, you know, 18 to 24 year old males, I think a lot of them are going to go, hey, that blue guy's dick is in my face all the time, I'm leaving. You know? Like, it's really just, from what I've seen, like, an unashamed, not copy, but you did really stick to the source, which is cool, I guess. But still, that's for a pretty small audience, I think.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I can't imagine it'll actually do well. I don't think anyone's girlfriend is going to want to go see this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is the problem with the kind of the hype machine that's around it. Like, I don't know if it was Moore originally who branded it like unfilmable.
Yeah.
But like
Alan Moore.
But like, that's really, I think, why I think that's more the excitement about the movie, that, you know, this movie, you know, like Terry
Gilliam
tried to do this movie, or wanted to do this movie. In the 80s.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So this movie has been around, for a long time. I think that's the excitement behind it. But a good, like, I feel, when I was trying to think of, like, a rating out of 5 stars, and I was, immediately went 3 stars. But I kind of felt bad giving it 3 stars. It kind of deserves 4 stars.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think I'm pretty happy with that kind of review. That's kind of what I was expecting, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. Who's the director? Zack
Snyder.
Snyder. I generally think he did a good job. And people who kind of like 300 are maybe slightly disappointed in terms of the actual physical action, just in terms of punch fights, even. But, you know, overall, you know, a pretty decent movie. And... like, do you even want to get into the slightly changed ending?
Well, I have 2 questions.
Yes, go ahead.
If you wouldn't mind, one of them is about the changed ending. First one is, and I'm pretty sure a friend of mine is, like, dying to know this, Rorschach in the prison, where the guy's trying to kill him when he's in the prison cell. Is that scene good?
Well, where he's like, you know, I'm not locked in here with you, you're locked in here with me.
Well, that bit, but also the more specific where he's in a prison cell and some gangster guy who's really small comes and tries to kill him, and he gets a guy's arms and, like, ties them together. That particular scene,
may I flesh it out?
Please.
Again, this is another example of how they've managed to make a scene more violent.
My friend's going to be happy when he does that.
So when this guy, this little midget guy who he's put away,
Rorschach makes some great jokes about his size.
And it's all, actually, that's one thing I just very quickly sidestep is about the script. Like, sometimes it's verbatim. It's coming out as speech bubbles, you know, it's coming out exactly as it was written, which is great.
Yeah.
And particularly in that scene. but yeah, when this guy, this midget's kind of... lackey is tied to the bars.
The bars of the cell, yeah.
And in the comic, how they...
I don't remember, but they probably cut through his arms or something.
That's what happens in the film, but I remember looking it up in the comic book, and it happens slightly different. Maybe it happens like that, but it's just not as graphic.
Maybe it doesn't. Like, maybe that's just what I'm assuming. It's been a while since.
I can't remember, really, to be honest. But it is like, that's, oh wow.
Okay, and so question the second.
Yes.
So the ending, And I have this on, okay, like real extreme spoilers, because the ending is different in the film than the movie. Or sorry, in
or
the
book. Comic book, yeah.
So if you don't want the ending of the movie spoiled, like,
come back to us in around 30 seconds.
About, well, 2 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
So in the movie, or sorry,
in the comic book.
The comic book is a giant squid that explodes. And the brilliance of the giant squid is, I don't know if a lot of people realize this, but what's so good about the giant squid is that the smartest man in the world has created this thing to destroy new, you know, to kill like millions of people, and it's a giant squid. So no one will be able to trace it back, because no one will say, it was a giant squid. Of course, the smartest man in the world came up with a giant exploding squid. You know?
Yes.
This is untraceable. Yes. That's the genius of it. But in the movie, from what I understand, from the trailer, I mean, if you've seen the trailer, you know what happens.
Well, yeah, exactly.
It's Dr. Manhattan, like energy balls, is that correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's pretty much like, these energy balls that are in cities all over the Earth that basically, just kind of explode.
Just explode like nuclear service.
Yeah, pretty much. Frankly, like, it didn't bother me at all.
Yeah, no, that sounds like, it actually sounds like a pretty good change. It fits in fairly well.
Yeah. Even thinking about the squid, if the squid had been in the movie, just
squid would look shit. Yeah, like, let's be honest. There's no way you could do that.
It just worked, you know, a lot kind of better, and they kind of fit in with how Dr. Manhattan is helping the guy.
Ozzyman.
Yes, yeah. And how he's kind of like, he's, you know, properly framed him for this in the kind of movie.
Yeah.
But if you read the book. You need to go and see the movie.
Yeah.
And definitely, one thing I must say is that, like, I really want to see the movie again.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I mean, that's a good sign.
That is a good sign.
A really quick thing on the ending again. Yeah. In the trailer, Night Owl is down on the snow with his arms there, and he goes, "No!" And when I saw that, I was worried.
Yeah.
Again, extreme spoilers for the movie. Extreme spoilers. Okay. I was worried that they had changed Rorschach dying to Sally Jupiter's being killed.
Oh, okay.
And is that true? No.
That's not true.
That's new. They killed
him. No. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
The ending up, I mean, frankly, like everything is pretty much verbatim, except for the ending, which has been switched around a little bit, made a little bit shorter in terms of the ending's quite long in the book.
I was about to say otherwise, because in the book, the ending's about 4 pages.
No, well, here. There's a lot happening. We've got to watch more.
Rorschach dies maybe 4 pages from the end. Fairly. Fairly quick.
Well, just in terms of, there's a lot of scene changing. There's a lot of different rooms or different, kind of sets, if you will, in the comic book that they're changing to or whatever. But most of it is just, you know, they're either inside this building that they're in or outside in the snow.
Okay. Yeah.
But you know what? When I was at this thing, because if you don't want to take my opinion for it, because many people, I'm sure, won't. But yes. But I did bump into Rob Curley, the owner of Sub City Comic Books in Dublin, and he thought it was brilliant.
Okay, and he didn't like Hulk.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that.
All right, I was gonna agree with you there. I was like, well, no, wait, I didn't like Hulk. but you know what I mean. So there you go.
Okay, Fears of the Dark.
Fears
Your
of
turn
the
again.
Dark. Oh, okay. It seems like it was my turn already. I'm tired of talking.
Yeah. I'm tired of drinking. Yeah, let's just say that 10-second pause where we won't take a drink. That's a good radio. I don't know if you've ever listened to Smodcast, Kevin Smith's podcast.
No, I actually haven't.
Well, there's this period where the first 30-35 episodes are brilliant, like really funny. And then he starts smoking weed before every podcast. And then it just takes a huge dip in quality to a point it's unlistable. It's just like, you know when you're drunk? Or you're sober and a friend of yours is drunk and then listening to that friend. And that's what this podcast has now become.
This is brilliant.
Okay. Fears of the Dark.
We mentioned this a couple of podcasts ago. Because basically it was in the cinemas. It wasn't in Irish cinemas. But it was in English cinemas around October of last year.
Tom Moore recommended it.
Tom Moore recommended it as well.
We knew about it before then. But yeah. Tom Moore emphasized our need to.
So Fears of the Dark, very quickly, is a film that contains around 5... kind of short animated stories by the
comic artists.
But different comic artists and graphic artists as well.
Charles Burns has one on it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, Charles Burns is probably the top slot.
His is the best. Is that what you're telling me?
No. That's not what I'm telling you at all. Okay. But basically, I watched this last night, and it's, you know, Fears of the Dark. The slogan is "Don't watch it alone," and I was like, "Oh shit,
I'm alone. Maybe I'll just I'm alone and drunk."
It's
gonna end badly.
Yeah, it's gonna end in tears. But it was good. It was good. It was good. Very, like, I do recommend that you see it. Maybe not for the price I bought it at. Okay. I bought the DVD for like €26.
Yeah, you spend ridiculous amounts.
I do. I've seen it elsewhere for €24. But
even the €2 is going to make it.
But wait, wait a little bit and it'll come down. But it's really great to see something like this being made. Because basically the fight, like, say, we'll start with Charles Burns' story, is a similar story, similar-ish to Black Hole.
Okay.
In its kind of, I thought it was, anyway, in a very small kind of scale.
Well, that sounds like a good idea, in fairness.
Well, yeah, I guess, but I mean, I know, like, if Charles Burns was here, he would, like, adamantly disagree.
Yeah.
But basically, there's kind of, a very typical kind of Charles Burns story, and it's really great to see his style
and
stuff brought to life. If a little kind of weirdly, like, you can kind of tell that everything's computer generated, but that it's been just put the black lines around it. So not kind of traditionally animated as some of the other shorts in this movie are. But his, I thought his was going to be the best story.
I thought I'd not seen it.
No, but it's actually not. The best story comes from a guy who's known as Blutch. But he's from Strasbourg.
Like a wanker.
like a Madonna kind of person. Well, his real name is like Christian Hincher, from Strasbourg, as I said. But he has a great story. I mean, the whole kind of film has the kind of feel as it's not for all out scares, but it's not for all out scares. But it's kind of feels like maybe you're reading an Edgar Allan Poe story, it's very kind of atmospheric.
Yeah.
But the Blutch. Tale is basically just starts off with this guy, this really creepy looking guy walking along, and he's got four kind of Rottweiler dogs who are all kind of snarling.
Yeah.
And all these stories, I should say, are intercut with each other.
You don't watch them separate?
Well, the Charles Burns one you do, but I'm pretty sure most of the other ones are kind of
weird.
Intercut. Yeah, you think it wouldn't work, but it kind of does.
On the DVD, can you choose to watch them separately? Is that a special feature?
No, I don't, because they don't. They're not kind of. Apart from the Charles Burns one,
they are kind of. They're not connected. As well, or
no, not even, but it works. And believe me, it works.
That sounds weird.
It is weird. But anyway, this story, just to give you a flavor, is this creepy looking guy going taking a walk with these ferocious dogs for them, and he just walks along. For example, the first person he encounters is this little boy, who I thought was going to be like the kind of spook of the story, because he's got really large kind of hollowed out eyes, and I was like, this kid is going to be inflicting some ghostly happenings upon this man. But then when the dogs gets loose and fucking kills the child, and basically the rest of the story is like just to hit your man walking and encountering different people who all get savagely killed by one of these dogs, and like savagely killed.
Violence levels.
But it is great, and I won't spoil the ending of that particular story, but it's great. It's really good. Charles Burns' story is it's good, but it's not great. There's another story in there by a graphic artist who, kind of from the school of, rectangles and circles are cool. So literally it's narration while these kind of interesting shapes are happening, and that's not so good. I didn't like that so much. But there's some other really kind of, there's a story about a little Japanese girl who's possessed by a samurai and she's killing everybody, and that's awesome. But the one thing, just on this DVD, because that's what I'm reviewing, the DVD as well as the movie itself, but there's actually a great interview with Charles Burns.
Okay.
On it.
I've never seen Charles Burns even.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Like, but it's at least 50 minutes, and he's not only talking
50
about.
50 minutes. Oh, yeah.
But no, he's not only talking about the movie, but he's talking about Black Hole.
Yeah.
And all his experiences and stuff, and it's really, really interesting. So from that point of view, it's a definite kind of good purchase.
Absolutely. That sounds great.
Yeah. So definitely, like, wait till it goes down a bit. Mm. It's a really great, interesting piece of work.
Just to point out, I don't know if people notice that, I'm sure most people do who are interested, but Black Hole has been made into a movie, I don't know if you saw this, but Neil Gaiman and Roger Avery are writing. They wrote, Neil Gaiman obviously writes comics, sadly,
yeah, yeah.
But they wrote Beowulf together, which is pretty good. So, I mean, hopefully, I'd say it would be. If you get a good director,
I'd say well, that's actually, it's interesting you said that, because that's the one of the things that he talks about on the interview. But he kind of makes the point that, this film is completely, like, I don't know, I think it's coming from France, because even Charles Burns' story is in French.
Okay, yeah.
But he was saying, like, within this, the producers really wanted him to have complete control over his short and animated as much as he could.
Okay.
And, you know, he was even in...
Really put a lot out.
Strangely, it seemed like he was in with the French voice actors. And unless he can speak French, which I'm pretty sure he can't, I couldn't see the relevance of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically, they gave him every single thing, but he was talking about the film and how he was asked, would he write the script? And he basically said he's kind of a little bit... Not sick, but, you know, he's kind of spent a... Like, Black Hole was a long time in the making, for anyone following it in its just comic book form.
Yeah, yeah.
So he just wanted to do something different. But yeah.
Black Hole's great. Just that thing you said about the voice actors, I don't know if you've seen the anime, Fooly Cooly. Clearly haven't.
I clearly haven't.
Yeah. But the director and that, they have director's commentaries on DVDs by the Japanese director.
Okay.
But with like, the English person over who did the translations translating for him and asking him questions.
Oh, okay.
But he said, but basically they got him to choose the voice actors, even though he doesn't speak a word of English, because basically he used the word essence, but basically the sound of their voice.
Yeah, yeah.
He chose them based on that rather than, this essence matches the person I chose or whatever. So guess it would be something similar.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, I've digressed. We're now talking about The Secret of Kells.
The Secret of Kells.
I'd just like to put my cards on the table.
Put your cards.
I have nothing negative to say about this movie. It was a fucking maze. Like, it was so good.
That's true.
It was just because I was wearing a suit. Although I was wearing a suit. The premiere of this movie, which we went to wearing suits, was phenomenal. But the movie's so good.
The movie is good.
Go see it. that's our review. Go see it. No. I don't know if you want to start, because I'm full of fucking blanks.
But brilliant. From anyone who listened to our interview with Tom Moore, the director, last month, we'll kind of maybe know a little bit about it. But basically, it's about a group of monks who are...
In Kells.
Yeah, in Kells, who live in a kind of fortified...
area.
And
the Vikings are coming basically to attack, and they know this, so they're trying to fortify up. Yeah. Fortified place.
And in the midst of that, Brendan, with the help of this new arrival of this new kind of...
This kind of legendary illustrator.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's working on a book.
Which will turn out to be the Book of Kells. So within that, it's about the Vikings coming and them trying to fortify it. And then also the work to get the Book of Kells illustrated.
But it was amazing. I don't know, I'm trying to pick out... the music was brilliant. That's start there. I can't remember who composed that. Keeler played the music.
I can't believe I won't remember the name of it, but he's the guy. He's done a lot of soundtracks. One of them for Coraline. But he's a really famous. I didn't know.
The music is brilliant. Keeler do a great job as well playing. But besides the music, the animation, man. I said this to you after we came out. You could take any frame of this movie and put it as a picture on your wall or as a desktop on your PC and be absolutely stunned by it.
Yeah.
Every time you see it, the amount of detail. In particular, I'm sure you agree, is I don't remember the character's name. Brendan Gleeson's character.
Right.
His room, where he's scribbled all these drawings about how he's got to fortify the area.
Yeah, on the wall.
And like that, I could look at that, honestly, for years.
It
is amazing.
It is.
And every panel, every frame of the movie has that kind of detail in it. Really.
It is great. That's the one thing about it that, that's almost one of its big attractions, is the fact that it is a very traditional kind of 2D style, hand-drawn kind of animation.
Yeah.
But there's so many, within that kind of hand-drawn thing, there's lots of bits that are kind of seem like they're paintings.
Yeah.
And, there's lots of different art or styles that have been used really just blow you away.
It is probably the best looking animated movie I've ever seen. Hands down. I can say that actually with ease. Obviously the fact that his art stuff is just amazing and Tom Moore is obviously awesome. The story's great, unbelievable. In fact, the pacing, I remember thinking at the start actually that it was going a little slow. I don't know if you felt the same, but I looking, reflecting on it, like, it wasn't going slow at all, but just the stuff they need to set up kind of in the first act, they do that well, because it really ratchets up really quickly come the second and third act.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
shocking. You're at a ridiculous loss for words.
Yeah, which is a first for me.
The voice acting is really, really amazing.
There's two characters, and I think I was saying this to you when we left as well. Ashling, who is the kind of the sprite
of the forest, would be the best thing to say.
And Brendan Gleeson's character, whose name I don't remember, who both kind of have smallish roles in the movie. They're not actually in the movie that much.
Yeah.
So they have to be sold mainly through the voice acting and through the animation, because slight spoilers. I'm not spoiling the movie because you need to go see it, but those characters are put in peril at certain points in the movie where they haven't actually been on screen that much, maybe for a couple of scenes each mainly. I literally had my jaw on the floor. I was like, oh no, can't happen to this character. Yeah. Like, I loved him so much already. Like, it's just unbelievable. It's such an achievement. I can't actually put it into words. Like, the characters, say Brendan Gleeson's character, for example, his was actually, I think, more impressive than Ashling slightly, because he doesn't even have any kind of redeeming lines. Excuse the end of the movie, perhaps, but he's really mean. Like, the whole movie, he isn't nice, and even though you kind of understand his justifications for what he's doing, they're never spelled out right in any sense.
Yeah.
You know, but just A, Brendan Gleeson's voice acting so good, and B, the character design, he's hunched over, like he's got, like, literally got the weight of the world on his shoulders, carrying it. And just so that, even though he's been fucking a bastard the whole movie, when he's in danger, you're like, oh, odd, like, if he dies, I'll walk out of this movie. That would be ridiculous, you know?
Shouting at Tom Moore as I go.
Fuck you, Tom Moore! Screw you!
But that didn't happen.
No. Everything about this movie is fucking insane.
It was, no. I was like, and there's also, well, not predominantly a humorous movie or comedy but there's a lot of comedy in it that really, like, had me and everyone in the row that we were sitting on, you know, laughing.
Absolutely. It's very funny. Like, I remember when we saw it, when we interviewed Tom, where he showed us a few clips, and we were laughing out loud at, like, loads of bits, and then they showed us like a total of maybe 6 minutes of the movie, and there was some really good laughs. But if you take it on to a slightly higher level, like, theme wise if you will, like, the basic story again is that illustration, like, I mean, maybe I'm being presumptive here.
Go ahead.
But the story I got from it was, it was almost like Tom Moore made this movie for his son, saying, you know, illustration's awesome. Like, you can draw, like, the power of the power of your imagination and the ability to be able to put it onto paper is something to be cherished.
Yeah,
despite what anyone else tells you, despite what your teachers tell you, like, this is something you need to go for. And that's a really sweet and decent message. And if you take a little further, that just the idea of following your dreams, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be illustration, but just even if someone is telling you do this, you know, you don't do that.
I think that's
a really positive message to give to the kids, and I really hope, like, I hope it makes fucking $80 billion. It's amazing.
No, that's absolutely true. That's kind of a vibe I got from it, that, like, aside from all the kind of themes and stuff that was going on in terms of characters and that there was almost like a looming kind of theme of about the protection of art and how important art was to people and the protection of it, which was, and one thing that I have to say that I thought was great, I saw a bit of an influence, and I think we mentioned before, of Samurai Jack.
Gendy
the creator of Dexter's Lab and Samurai Jack. And obviously Tom told us in the last interview that he loves his stuff, but there was a couple of influences, you know, split screen kind of stuff going on, you know, where there's like lots of stuff going on.
I was thinking, even when I was watching it, I remember thinking, you know, this style is unique, but if I was to put one kind of influence on over all of it, it would be Gendy. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
Gendy. Absolutely.
Gendy to his friends.
And, yeah.
But the one thing...
Oh, can I interrupt? My point was, like, this movie is 100 times better looking than anything Gendy blah, blah, blah has ever done. But, like, I mean, nothing against him, but it's just the detail of the backgrounds mainly.
Yeah.
Like, is just astounding in this movie, and certainly that's nothing you could repeat on a weekly basis for a TV show, which is fair enough, you know.
Yeah,
I mean?
That's true. The only, the thing, so like after saying all that, the kind of, the worrying thing is that because it is a kind of very traditional 2D animation, as I think we were talking about after the film when we seen it, was that it's going to be a very hard sell.
It's at the same weekend as Watchmen as well.
Yeah, it's at the same day. At the same day as Watchmen. But, well, fuck Watchmen. Go and see The Secret of Kells.
Like, I mean, if you're going to see Watchmen, like, buy another ticket for Secret of Kells. Like, go see it.
Yeah. Because we're going to have to start a campaign. Because, like, literally, like, this is... I know, like, obviously it's out in Ireland, it's out in a lot of countries across Europe.
It's doing well in Europe.
But, like, and I'm sure, like, I'm sure it will be, like... It will be picked up very soon and become a more kind of global kind of hit. Hopefully it does.
Because it
really deserves to.
Yeah.
And like,
I think we talked about this with when we were beyond Maloney, but there's just this, and I mean, I feel it as well, like, I'm 100% guilty of this. It's kind of like negativity towards Irish created stuff because it burns so much because Irish created stuff is usually so bad.
Yeah, that's
true. This movie is so good. Like, yeah. It's easily one of the best movies I've ever seen. Like, easily.
Yeah.
Like, in the top 10 movies I've ever seen. It is that good.
Yeah,
like, you need to see it.
Yeah.
It'll blow your mind. And especially, whatever about, I know, like, some friends I have who watch football. You know? Those kinds of people.
Yeah, yeah.
They might enjoy. Anyone who's listening to this podcast who is interested in any way in sort of illustration or animation, like, absolutely needs to go see this movie. It will blow you away. You'll be so happy when you come out. Go fucking see it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Go see it. It's so good. Yeah, I love it.
This is brilliant. No, actually, on one thing, we were, as we said, we were at the premiere, and it was the closing film, a great honour to be the closing film of the Jameson Film Festival.
Absolutely.
And, like, one thing that I really was irked about,
yeah.
was the fact that it was the closing film, that it was an amazing film, and that it didn't get a standing ovation.
I know, what was that about?
And we were sitting at the front, the very front, in the very far corner.
Right.
We have the picture linked up down below.
Yeah.
But we were like, we were kind of looking around, waiting for someone to stand up.
I really regret that.
That will haunt me for the rest of my life.
Because I assumed it was coming. I just didn't want to stand up first.
Absolutely. Like, so just, you know, it really did deserve a standing ovation. I can't believe it didn't get. And I don't want to go into a rant because I have this whole thing about Irish audiences in general, be it in the theater or being in the film, cunts. But it really did, and certainly we're standing now, Tom. We're standing now.
Yeah.
But so go and see it, and go, as Tom says, go and see it twice. And certainly that's what I'll be doing.
Yeah.
Give it all the help.
I really hope that, like, if it gets some sort of international release, where maybe the stigma of, you know, it being Irish isn't sold the back, if you know what I mean.
Like, I don't think that in the international thing, I don't think the stigma of being Irish...
Oh no, what I mean is, I hope it gets a good international release, because that stigma doesn't exist in international...
Oh sorry,
release.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's absolutely... And just, I just seen this quote that I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Variety, of all people, have reviewed this movie already, but in their quote, which is a really positive review, but I thought this line was hilarious. It said, this may be the perfect film for children whose parents are historians specializing in pre-Renaissance periods.
One thing I need to, like, I wish I had a bigger outlet than the Comicast, which only hits a fairly small audience.
Yeah, yeah.
To just say, like, because I am that audience who wouldn't have went to see that, by the way, because Secret Kells, Bucky Kells, I'm not interested in Irish history.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It has nothing to do with that, almost.
Yeah, yeah.
It's such a trivial point in the story.
Yeah.
Well, trivial is wrong word, but a very small.
Because
it is important. But it almost makes you want to go read the book and see the Book of Kells.
It did. I, like, totally. That's what, like, actually, when I got home,
I
was just thinking, I need to go and find out about the Book of Kells. But that's one important point that and I think very cleverly and rightly so, that it doesn't, there's no religious undertones. It being, you know, the Book of Kells, you know.
No, absolutely. I almost wish if the movie were called, I mean, I'm not a marketer, but let's say the movie's called Brendan and the Secret Forest.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Something that it almost wouldn't have had that kind of stigma attached to it. I said it to a friend of mine today that I'd seen it, and he's like, oh, was that some sort of educational movie, you know?
Yeah,
and,
wow.
You know, well, no, it isn't.
It's insane.
So, yeah.
And two final points on this, but we're only ranting on this because we really enjoyed the movie.
Go fucking see it.
Go see it. The two things were, well, the first one I can remember, just because I thought was very funny, basically entertainment.ie had sent someone to the red carpet to interview everyone.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've seen any videos by entertainment.ie.
No, I haven't.
And I like.
Although I think Schmack and DeSalle's were upon.
Oh, were they? Okay, well, you know, I'm not going to hold back. The people they sent out are usually morons.
Yeah.
Who haven't really, you know, they who are just kind of like straight from the expose school of asking questions. But anyway, they were talking to Mick Lally, who does a voice in the film.
He was so good.
He was really good. But the genius thing, because I met Mick Lally once before, and it was genius. He was exactly like it was on the red carpet, kind of bewildered and kind of not knowing what was going on. But anyway, she said, like, you know, what do you think, or, you know, what does your character do in the film? And Mick Lally just goes, I don't really remember. It was around 3 years ago. Who do I play in this movie? And then he had this girl from Entertainment UK saying, tell him who he played and all this. And he was like, all right, that's very good. And then...
But that sounds interesting. Can I play that role?
Yeah, and then the best part about it was all her questions were obviously geared towards the recording of it. And he couldn't remember it. And it was questions like, so, you know, did you record in a booth or did you record in a big thing? And he goes, well, to be honest, you know, it was around 3 years ago. I don't remember. But this is, seriously, if I can find it, I'll link it up. But it's like a 5-minute interview where he just says, I don't remember. And he actually has a great excuse for it. He says, kind of, you know, when you finish something, your brain just kind of deletes all the shit about it. I'm like, no, it doesn't.
Maybe when you're older,
it does. Yeah, maybe. Now, one other very quick point.
Go work away, please.
I want to see Bold 3D. And they had screened a Secret of Kells trailer in front of it.
Okay.
And awesome. I thought this was possibly the best marketing ploy ever. I've never seen this before, where they played the Secret of Kells, they played two trailers, and then they played the trailer again for the Secret of Kells.
That's great.
Like, genius.
I just remembered just when you said
yes.
That there's one, like, there's so much of this in the movie, but like, there's just one point, like, there's...
I wonder if we'd be ranting like this if we weren't absolutely
hammered. Yeah. No, but like, there's so, like, the animation's so good. There's one point I just remember in particular, but there's tons of these points in the movie where Brendan just wipes his nose in his sleeve, and I was like there's tons of the movie moments like that where just the create character entirely, there's no dialogue, it's just through animation where they just do something small and you're just, he wipes his nose in his sleeve, and you're it just adds to the character so much. Like, it's a phenomenal movie, go see it. So I think we ranted well enough about that. Go see it.
It
was fucking great.
So then, now we come to our final section.
Yeah, so for the third section, what do you got, Liam? I know you have some news you want
to... That was it. I just wanted to very quickly plug the Dublin Comic Jam, which is starting to take off in a big way. Paddy Lynch is always filming me in. And what's happening, you can see their blog, and we'll link their blog, because I don't know if you've seen their blog, but it's absolutely amazing. Yeah. If you want to see a strip, a really long comic strip, like, written by the fucking creme de la creme of Irish comic art, like, you know, Phil Barrett, absolutely. Chris Judge, Bob Byrne, you know, loads of people that I can't remember right now, because there's loads of them that go to it. And this happens, like, on a certain date, and we'll put all the details up, but seriously, it's a great thing.
It's amazing.
We'd be there only, I'm in Kildare, I live in Kildare, it's hard for me to get up. And you work.
Yeah. Can't believe I didn't get to go see Watchmen. I was going to take the day off work. I was so close. So close.
Do you know, just very quickly, for people who might have missed this on Bob Byrne's blog, the Irish Times actually rang him up and offered him to go and see Watchmen, the one that I went to see, or the screening that I went to see, and, you know, said, you can review it for the Irish Times and we'll let you go. And he turned it down.
It's mad. Yeah. If the Irish Times ever, like, if you were listening and you're from the Irish Times, I'll review it and I'll give it whatever score you tell me.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Although they took my phone and my bag was actually searched.
I hate when they do that. They didn't even do that for the Secret of Cows.
No. Okay, we gotta go to the pub.
Half ten, man. We're not gonna get any fucking drinking.
We love you so much. It's toodle-pip from me.
Good night and good luck.